You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
I went off to college in the fall of 1986, and one of the feelings I had when I left home and went to college was, I am finally free. Like, I'm on my own. I left home. I went to UT. And I thought, I am finally free. I'm free to do whatever I want, whenever I want, with whomever I want. Right? If I want to study, I'm free to do that. Or to not study, as it were. If I want to go to Kirby Lane at 3 in the morning and eat like 3 pounds of pancakes, I'm free to do it. If I want to eat cereal for dinner and I want to sleep till noon, I'm free to do that. If I want to skip class and go to the lake with friends, I have that freedom. It's kind of a weird thing being a college freshman because you're on your own for the first time, seemingly accountable to no one. It's like, I'm finally free. Here's the strange thing about my freshman year, though, as I look back on it now. Even though I had come into all this newfound freedom, I actually felt more bound than I ever had in my life. I felt bound by this sense that I had to perform or prove myself. I felt bound by social anxiety, insecurities that I never knew I had came to the surface. I felt bound by loneliness. I felt bound by my own sin that I couldn't seem to control in my life. And so freedom, let these guys go by, freedom wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, at least not the way I was understanding freedom. Like, yes, I could come and go whenever I pleased, and yet I longed for more. Like, there were no boundaries on how I spent my time. No restrictions on my relationships, no rules surrounding what I ate and when I ate. And yet I longed for more. I longed for something truer and deeper, a truer and deeper freedom. That's what I longed for. I just didn't know how to articulate it. And I certainly didn't know how to get it. Advent, we've said, is a season of longing. Jordan was talking about that today. The word Advent just means arrival or coming. We long for the arrival of the only one who can fulfill our deepest longings. This has always been true of the people of God. In the Old Testament, Israel longed for the coming of the Messiah. And Isaiah, one of their prophets, announced his coming. Did you know 700 years before Jesus was born, he announced his coming? And in chapter 61, those first three verses are kind of the mission statement of the Messiah. It's what the Messiah would come to do. I want you to listen as I read this mission statement of the Messiah. Look at Isaiah 61. And as you listen to it, I want you to notice that the Messiah would come to meet the deepest longings of the people of God. Listen to the word of the Lord. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord has anointed me. And that's where we get our word Messiah from. He's the anointed one, the Christ. He's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit. Today we're just going to look at, we're just going to focus on the promise there at the end of verse 1. Did you notice what it says there at the end of verse 1? It says the Messiah will proclaim liberty to the captives. He'll open prison doors for those who are bound, meaning he'll release them from darkness. He'll liberate them from oppression. So this is a promise of freedom. Like, when you think about Christmas, do you ever think about freedom? That Christmas is a promise of freedom. that Jesus actually came to bring freedom. Now, I want to talk about freedom for a few minutes together this afternoon. And here's our plan. Number one, I just want us to see that we long for freedom. Like, it's part of who we're made to be. It's a human longing. We long for it. But number two, what is it, really? What is freedom, and how do we get it? And then number three, how are we to live in light of the freedom? All right, let's start with our longing. We long for freedom. And the reason we long for it is because we're made for it. You and I are not made to be in bondage. It's not how we're designed. Israel in the Old Testament is actually a vivid picture of longing for freedom, because you read the Old Testament, most of their history that's recorded there involves some form of slavery or oppression that they're subject to. They were in Egypt for 430 years. That is a long time. Now, they probably weren't slaves that entire time, but they were slaves at least half of that time. And what that means is they were slaves for about as long as we've been a nation. Can you imagine life 200 years ago? Can you even picture what it's like? Can you relate to it in any way? It's hard to imagine life before the iPhone, I think, right? Wait, your cell phone used to like fold in two? You texted with the number buttons? Like, we have a very narrow historical imagination. But for Israel, it wasn't hard for them to imagine life 200 years ago. It was just like their life. They get up in the morning, they go to work making bricks to build the dumb pyramids, right? And then you come home at night and you realize, no, this routine characterizes my entire life. It characterizes the life of my entire family. I'm a slave. My parents were slaves. My grandparents were slaves. My great-grandparents were slaves. Well, that's starting to get way far back in time, isn't it? Do you even know the names of your great-grandparents? My great-great-grandparents were slaves. My great-great-great-grandparents were slaves. If you're an Israelite in ancient Egypt, slavery is your identity. You don't even know what freedom is. You can't describe freedom if someone asks you to write about it, because you've never experienced it. But here's the deal. You long for it. Something in you knows this is not right. Your enslavers have dehumanized you, and yet they've not been able to take the image of God away from you. And the image of God in you longs for freedom. So you pine away. Day after day, month after month, year after year, you pine away in slavery. Exodus chapter 2 says this. The people of Israel groaned. They groaned because of their slavery. But then there's this little hint of good news. It says, "And God heard their groaning, and he knew." He heard their groaning, and we know the story. He raises up a deliverer, a savior of sorts, Moses, who leads them out of Egypt, out of slavery. He leads them to freedom. That story, that Exodus story, becomes the gospel story for Israel. Right, that's the story that they tell again and again and again and again. Just like we do every week, we tell the gospel again and again. We never change the story, because that's the good news. It's a story of freedom. Deuteronomy 6 says this. Hey, Israel, in the future, when your kids ask you, what's the meaning of all these rules and stipulations and ordinances that God has given us? Why do we live like this, Mom and Dad? Tell them a story. Start the story like this. We were slaves in Egypt. It's a shameful beginning to the story, isn't it? We were owned. We were in bondage. But the story doesn't stop there. It says, but God brought us out. He brought us out that he might bring us into the land promised to our fathers. So the gospel story of Israel is a story of freedom. That's the story that they would tell again and again. God had given them what they longed for. They longed for freedom, release from bondage. Here's the problem. Israel would be in bondage again. They would be oppressed again throughout their history by the Assyrians, by the Babylonians, by the Romans. And so when Isaiah writes down Isaiah 61, he envisions a people who will be conquered again. He envisions a people who will be exiles again. Like, he envisions a people who will be longing for freedom again. They will still be singing, oh come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel. They're in captivity. They're in bondage. And that's the type of situation that they're experiencing when Jesus is born in Bethlehem. Do you know why Jesus was born in Bethlehem? Not because it would be cute on Christmas cards someday. He was born in Bethlehem because Israel was under Roman rule. They were not a free people when he was born. And Caesar declared that everyone had to go back to their hometown to be registered for tax purposes. Right? Jesus was not, the Messiah was not born into freedom. He was born into a time where they were still longing, Israel was still longing for freedom, pining away for freedom, which raises the question, what is it? What is freedom? And how do we get it? And that's the second thing I want us to look at. What is freedom, and how do we get it? Jesus, according to this messianic passage, came to secure freedom on our behalf. But the way Jesus talks about freedom, it's a lot deeper than we tend to think, right? It's more profound than just freedom from political slavery. It's more pervasive, more holistic, more comprehensive than just being liberated from an oppressor or liberated from prison in some way. In John chapter 8, Jesus has this conversation about freedom with some folks. I want you to look at John 8. Flip over in your Bible to John chapter 8. It's the fourth book in the New Testament. Jesus is talking about freedom, and he's going to define it in the way he understands it. John 8. Let's pick up in the middle of the conversation in verse 31. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." They answered him, "We are offspring of Abraham. We've never been enslaved by anyone. How is it that you say you will become free?" So Jesus invites these folks, he gives them an invitation into true freedom, and they are insulted by the invitation. Like, what do you mean, free? Like, what do you mean we'll be free? We're Abraham's descendants. That's our religious pedigree. We've never been enslaved by anyone, right? Unless you count Egypt and Babylon and Assyria and Persia and Greece. And now Rome. Other than that, though, our freedom has been secure. We've never been enslaved in any way, Jesus. So Jesus is going to explain to them that there's a greater threat to their freedom than Rome. Right? There's a greater form of slavery than political slavery. And that's where Jesus wants to take the conversation. Look what he says in verse 34. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin," meaning everyone who makes a lifestyle of sin, who makes a practice of sin, "is a slave to sin." So there's the real slavery. Slavery to sin. That is the real bondage that Jesus wants to talk about. Right? Every human being faces this kind of bondage. It's what Martin Luther and John Calvin called the bondage of the will. Like, our will, in its natural state, is bound to sin. Left to ourselves, we are in bondage to sin. We have to obey it. Sin is our master, is what Jesus is saying here. Now, that raises the question, what is sin? How do we describe this idea of sin? Because we need to, if we're enslaved to it, we need to know what it is. Ray Stedman gives a helpful description of sin. Listen to this. He says, "Sin is that fallen twist in a person which makes him or her want to play God on every occasion. We want the world to revolve around us, always to be at the center of things. And that self-centeredness is the root of sin. So sin is self-centeredness, right? Sin is self-rule, self-mastery. Jesus is saying, hey, the slave master I'm telling you ought to be worried about is not Caesar. It's not some other oppressor. It's the tyranny of the ego. It's the tyranny of self. Like Jesus is saying, whatever you live for or whoever you live for, that's your master. You can't get, so if you live for sin and self, that's your master. And listen, sin is a horrible master. Sin wants to dominate you. Sin wants to dehumanize you. That's what an enslaver does, right? You know this? Like to enslave someone, another person, you have to dehumanize that person. That's what sin does to us. Like when you give yourself, when I give myself to sin, the more I do, the less I'm able to live out my full humanity. I recently read an excerpt of an interview with John Mayer, the musician. He's a brilliant musician. He was brutally honest about himself in this interview. And when I read it, I thought, you know, he captured in a profoundly sad way, an incredibly accurate way, what Jesus is saying here. Listen to some of this. John Mayer says, I am a self-soother. So from the very outset, he shows who's at the center of meeting his needs. I'm a self-soother. The internet, DVR, Netflix, Twitter, all these things are moments in time throughout your day when you're able to soothe yourself. We have an autonomy of comfort and pleasure. And then he gets dark, he starts talking about explicit images. And he says, there have probably been days when I saw 300 images like this before I even got out of bed. He says, how does that not affect the psychology of having a relationship with somebody? It's got to. He says, this is my problem now. Rather than meet somebody new, I'd rather go home and replay the amazing experiences I've already had. And what this explains is that I'm more comfortable in my imagination than I am in actual human discovery. See, giving himself to sin is not making him thrive in his humanity. It's actually stunting his ability to live out what it means to be fully human. I'm amazed by that, those words, that he's so honest, because John Mayer is rich and famous. He can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, with whomever he wants, and yet, according to this, he's not free. He's enslaved because of who is running his life. Sinful, selfish human nature left in his natural state. If the deepest kind of slavery is slavery to sin, and Jesus seems to be saying that it is, that means the deepest kind of freedom is freedom from sin. That's what freedom is. Sean said it up here a few minutes ago. Freedom is not getting to do whatever I want. Freedom is having the ability to do what I ought to do. Freedom is the ability to live like I'm made to live, to thrive in my humanity. That would be freedom. So how do we get it? How do we get it? Look what Jesus says. Verse 34. We'll read verse 34 again. John 8:34. Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. So Jesus uses this image here of a household slave or a household bondservant. Everyone he was talking to knew that the slave couldn't free himself or herself. The slave had no power to get out from under slavery. The slave cannot wake up one morning and say, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm getting a new job. I'm out. That's not how it worked. In order for the slave to be liberated, someone in the household had to liberate him or her, had to set them free, which is exactly what Jesus says here. He says, if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. That word indeed means really. truly. Like in your person, in the very nature of who you are, you will be free if the Son sets you free. How do I get freedom? It's received. The Son sets me free. This is the gospel, right? The Son of God liberates me from the enslaving power of sin, but he doesn't stop there. He goes further and further. You know what he does? He allows me to share in his status of sonship. He makes it possible for me to be adopted into the family of God as a son or a daughter of God. He gives me a status change, and that gives me real freedom because I go from being a slave, not to being a bystander, but to being a son, to being a daughter. In Christ, I'm at home with God. I'm part of the household because the Son has set me free. Freedom, I want you to catch this, freedom comes through sonship. It comes through sonship. That's how you get it, through sonship. It's been God's plan all along. He's been dropping hints throughout the Bible that that's how freedom was going to come. You know what he said in Exodus chapter 4, back when Israel was enslaved by Egypt? Listen to what God says to Pharaoh in Exodus 4:22. God says to Pharaoh, "Israel is my firstborn son. Let my son go that he might serve me." See, freedom comes through sonship. God calls us his sons, then he sets us free to serve him. Freedom is not that I don't serve anyone. Freedom is not that I don't have a master or a lord. It's just having the right master, the right lord. It's serving the right person. In this case, we get to serve the God who made us. And we get to call him Father. That's sonship. God sent the Messiah, his one and only son, to proclaim liberty to the captives, to open the prison for those who are bound. He sent his son to free us. Indeed, Christmas is a promise of freedom. So if that's true, how do we live? How should we live right now? How do we live in this freedom? Well, in one sense, we're still longing for freedom, aren't we? Freedom in full. We're still longing for Jesus to come back and usher in full freedom. Like one day we will be free from the presence of sin altogether. Not just from the penalty of sin, not just from the indwelling power of sin. We'll be free from the presence of sin. We will no longer face that strong temptation to give in to that familiar sin in our life. Won't that be awesome? Don't you long for that? Don't you long for the day that the freedom that Jesus has secured for you is actually lived out every moment of your actual life? But until then, we're still called to live in freedom. We're called not to go back to bondage. Well, how do you do it? Well, the New Testament says we live by faith. We walk by faith, which means we walk in dependence upon Jesus. Every 4th of July, we celebrate the birthday of our country, and we celebrate freedom. We call it Independence Day. Did you know the birthday of a Christian is not called Independence Day? It's called Dependence Day. Because Christian freedom is not independence. It's not cutting the cord and saying, I can do whatever I want now. Christian freedom is serving the right Lord. Christian freedom is not self-rule. It's freedom from self-rule. And so, when the Son sets us free, the only way to walk in that freedom is by dependence on the Son. Meaning, as Christians, we never outgrow our need for Jesus. Christian maturity is not needing Jesus anymore. Christian maturity is realizing more and more how much I do need Jesus. So that when I feel the pull of sin in my life, that's what I'm saying. Jesus, I need you right now. I know you've set me free. Don't let me submit to a yoke of slavery again. You've set me free. Let me walk in light of that freedom. We live in freedom by faith in Jesus. When I was a freshman at UT, I mentioned that I often felt like I was bound. Felt bound by my own sin, bound by my own insecurities, bound by this drive to run my own life. But you know what's interesting? Every day on campus, I would walk right past the promise of freedom. Because every day on campus, I would walk right past the UT Tower, and there's an inscription on the UT Tower that says this: "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." I walked past that every day, and I had no idea who said that. I thought it was like Plato, MLK, Gandhi, somebody really smart said that. And then I found out it was Jesus. It was John 8:32. We read it today. "You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." The way to freedom was like right there for me. Like the gospel message was right there. It was actually being proclaimed by my secular university to the whole campus. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Which raises the question, what's the truth? Or who's the truth? Jesus made a bold claim about himself. He said, "You know what? I am the truth. I am the truth." That means I'm the way to freedom. It was just right there, right? For every human being who would receive it, the truth of the way to freedom is right there if you just embrace it. Like, if you haven't already, would you trust in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus for you? The Son of God will set you free, and you'll be free indeed. It's the best Christmas present you can imagine. Why would you not receive that gift? Let's thank him for it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.